problem with shrinking the streets is that the trucks that we have coming down from Canada are much longer than the truck that they used for the test. I was at the test. I'd like to say that I think that the standard for the street width is a problem for our company in getting those long trucks in. Just last week, I had 25-foot lumber, which is hanging out at that point over cars, as I'm trying to move it into our shop, and it's going to get more dangerous if we shrink the streets, thus forcing us to move. That's all I have to say.
Okay. I'm just curious, because you mentioned Simon Benson House earlier. What do you make? What do you make?
Moldings.
Well, we make moldings, and we also exactly duplicate them. So when that house was being moved, we were extremely instrumental in saving the house. There was, first of all, I had been in that house when I was a child and loved the architecture of it. And when it came that it was going to be destroyed for the 17-story building that was put there, we had an opportunity to help save it. So because we donated our profits towards the depth of remodeling it took, we had to grind 35 different patterns to match those moldings, anywhere from the siding to the handrails to all the paneling in the building. But this is what we've been doing in Portland for 35 years, and we have over 4,000 profiles we produced in this architecture of our city, and we've done this building too for Artec when they redid this one. So a lot of our patterns are in this. Your patterns are being reproduced because we matched them perfectly.
Thank you, sir.
Hi, I'm Larry Corwin. I'm president of McCoy Millwork. We are a wholesale distributor of specialty wood products in Southeast Portland. We are located on Southeast 4th and Carruthers. And although we are not adjoining the property and the streets that are in the issue here, as a member of the Central East Side and industrial user, my concern is that the rules and development, as are going forward, you're going to encounter this more all the time, and that these rules will inhibit the safe and effective freight movement and truck mobility in the Central East Side. Just because you can move a truck into an area does not necessarily mean that it is safe or provides for that effective loading or unloading. The cones, as you saw there, the truck was making it past the cones, but again, the more you constrict it, the more it is a challenge to safety. And also, just because you can move the truck into the area doesn't mean that you can safely and effectively remove materials and move loads off of that truck. I urge the council to find for the appeal to seek a resolution that protects the existing industrial business and the need for adequate freight movement to protect the viability and jobs associated with those businesses. And I think you're going to encounter this more as time goes on, so it's a good time to take a look at it and try to protect those industrial users that are in a position to provide jobs and pay taxes in this location. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Do you think that the proposed solution of signing it for truck loading only will work?
I would have concerns only from the standpoint that I think anything that would reduce the street in any dimension to what they're facing now is going to be a problem. If you could provide for that in some way that would maintain that distance with signage, if it was adequately implemented, potentially could be a solution.
Okay, thank you. Next three.
The next three are Myla Feisterman, Hope Redman, and Kathleen Gatto. And they will be followed by Karen Harry, Marianne Schwab, and I believe it's Eric Carmichael.
Welcome. We will start with you. Just give us your name, and you have 3 minutes, and there's a clock in front of you.
I'm Hope Redman. I'm the daughter of Mike Redman, the owner of Creative Woodworking. City Council members, thank you for taking your time to hear this case regarding the street in front of my shop. This workplace means a lot to my family and me. I've grown up close to the shop and remember how fun it is to ride my bike a mile from my house in the summer to visit my dad. Being raised in a family business, I was able to explore my interest from building simple objects with my brother and learning how to bring out the color in wood to working in the office. For the last couple years, I've been answering phones and helping our secretary with work orders. In having this opportunity, I found that I really did enjoy many of the aspects in working in the office. If the shop had not been as close as it was to my house, I would not have been able to be down at my dad's shop finding out what I would like to pursue in life. This location of the shop has been great at times because my dad was able to burn the midnight oil and go get those last-minute jobs done so that he could provide for our family and build a business. I remember those late nights my dad would bring my brothers and I down with him so we could spend time with him. I loved it because we got to play in the wood shop and spend time with him while he worked with my brothers and I and built a great family business. If the streets get narrowed, we will be slowly suffocated because the trucks will not be able to come easily to our shop. If trucks cannot turn or be unloaded or loaded in the street, we cannot satisfy our customers' needs. Having an industrial area in Portland allows the city of the city to have local jobs, grow their business, and pursue their ideas. Portland is great at having very diversified job opportunities, and I hope that they continue to encourage that. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Kathleen Gatto, and I'm here on behalf of Gatto & Sons today. In the letter you received, we are a local produce company that has been there since 1935 and employ quite a few people that we have maintained through the recession. We love the Inner East Side. It gives us a wonderful spoke to use our business. Many of our companies that we supply produce to are in the Belmont and Hawthorne area, but it allows us easy access to the west side, to Vancouver, a truck that goes up to Bend, and one that goes down to Eugene. So it has been a wonderful place for us. It appears that the building that's being created across the street from us had a specific dimension when they began. And now that it has evolved to this point, they are requesting to have 3 feet of the street. And I noticed the photos that showed the semi-trucks coming through there, but they showed none of the other traffic that's on those streets. We have a fair amount of cars going up and down the street, bicycles, an occasional skateboarder. And this building that's wonderful that's going to bring business into the east side is going to also bring traffic that's going to be competing with the trucks that we use to unload. Our normal hours of having semi-trucks come in and out are from 6 a.m. to 1 p.m. and then from 10 in the evening to 2 a.m. Our trucks then are loading to go out in the city between 1 a.m. and 5 a.m. and then returning between 11:30 a.m. and 1. I just happened to be down at the warehouse today and got a quick picture. This isn't even a semi-truck.
We're not allowed to.
Oh, you're not allowed. I can leave it over there. But it just displays our trucks that are bringing in.
Sorry, we are allowed to look at
it. You are allowed. Okay. So we oftentimes just have trucks such as this, which is like got a 16-foot box on the back that is bringing things in from local produce houses. But it shows the congestion that is there by the time you get a forklift truck out and you've got cars parked on both sides of the street, and then there's the regular ebb and flow of traffic in this area. So it is a bit congested, and it is difficult for us to imagine having the street narrow just for the safety of everyone. We are hoping, in terms of the possibility of a modification of the parking signage after 6 months from the build-out, that our understand is that PBOT will make changes only with the agreement of the affected property owners. So that is pretty much what our concerns are.
Thank you.
I'm Myla Feasterman. I'm the president of National Builders Hardware. We're located at 1019 Southeast 10th Avenue, so we're directly west of the Killian project between Taylor and Yamhill.
You have a whole city block?
Yes. Yes. And we've been, the business has been doing business in the Central East Side since, I believe, the 1950s, and we've been at our current location since 1978. That's also the year that I started there, a fact which I only mention because I want you to know that I have a lot of history with the Central East Side myself, and I've watched the area change over time. we love doing business in the Central East Side. As Kathleen mentioned, it's a great central location for us. We're a wholesale operation, just like the Gatto and Sons and Brian at GXI mentioned. So our business is really dependent on being able to get really large trucks, 40 to 50 foot trucks, into our loading dock, which is located directly across the street from the proposed development. When I heard about the narrowing of the streets, we originally got, I have to say that the people at Killian have been very good about keeping me updated about the process from the beginning, and they had a lot of drawings and assured me that that the taking the space out of the street was not going to be a problem. So it really wasn't until July of this year when we did this real-world test of what this was really going to look like and how it would impact our business that we really understood that the drawings as they existed were not going to work. And I had a couple of surprises already in listening to other people's testimony here, and that Kurt with the city mentioned that that the Killians were now talking about maybe eliminating the bump out in front of our in front of our loading dock. That would actually be very helpful, as would no parking in front of our loading dock would be great too. I'm getting a little ahead of myself here. I wanted to talk about why I think the narrowing of the street is a bad idea, but I think you've heard a lot of people mention that test. Taking 3 feet out in front of our loading dock would really make it nearly impossible for most truck drivers to get in and out of our dock. They have to back up from either the north or the south on 10th and swing in at a right angle into our loading dock. And I did submit a picture with my written testimony for this hearing, and it shows that when they're going through that process right now, they're literally within inches, sometimes a foot, of the parked cars across the street. That was the other thing that came up today. It hasn't always been that there are parking across the street from us. When the produce companies were located across the street, it was truck loading, and it worked much more smoothly for our company then too. So a possible compromise with parking would be great. But I really do also have a concern, as a number of people have mentioned, about safety. We're increasing traffic along a street for trucks, cars, bikes, pedestrians at the same time that we're narrowing the roadway. I'm taking too much time, so thank you.
Are there currently sidewalks in this area?
Yes, in front of our building and across the street. The produce people had 8-foot sidewalks, I think, in front of their warehouse, and then had a truck loading zone in the street where parking is taking place right now.
So there's currently sidewalks along the property line of the proposed redevelopment block?
Yes.
And they're just regular sized sidewalks?
Yeah, and I believe they're the 8-foot. And those were the suggestions that I had. If we could leave them as 8-foot, that might be a possible solution here. If they have to be 11 feet, because I understand that city code now, we would have preferred that Killian would have taken it out of their property. Failing any of those alternatives, if we could do some no parking. I understand Brian with GXI's concerns about taking more parking places out of the district, because it is a concern, but I think the most important thing here has to be safety and the continued viability of the businesses. I think it's a great resource for Portland to have these businesses be able to operate where people can walk and bike to their jobs.
So there's currently an 8-foot sidewalk plus parking. And that's,
I believe, I haven't measured it myself,
but that kind of
I think
just
it's
to get
a standard size.
And that's
sidewalk.
Working reasonably well for your truck traffic.
If it were posted as no parking, it would be. The fact that there are vehicles parked across the street from us has made it, over the last several years since the building burned down across the street, really challenging for trucks to get in and out. And I think somebody else mentioned that, trucks change, and it seems like they get bigger all the time. So it gets more and more difficult as time goes on to do what we need to do.
Thank you very much. That's very helpful.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you all.
The last three who signed up are Karen Hurray, I believe his last name, Mary Ann Schwab, and I think it's Eric Carmichael.
Okay,
thank you.
Campbell.
Sorry.
Welcome. We'll start with you and just give us your name, and you have 3 minutes, and the clock is right in front of you there.
My name is Karen Heary, and I write for the Southeast Examiner, and I've been covering this story. So I came to cover the story, but I chose to also speak because I wanted to express that I feel like one of your most important roles and one of my most important roles in the way we do our things as citizens here is very similar. That it's our jobs, you all and myself, to strike a balance and also to pull out the most important issues and highlight them and make a difference in what happens next in this city that we call home. So when I look at these issues and I look at what's before you, I'm very impressed with what Steve Novick has said when he keeps coming back and saying, okay, so you want what you're accustomed to. You know, you have it now and you want to keep it, but that's not what's on the rules. Where I feel we sit today is you have a chance to buy some time for things to be assessed. So if you make a vote today that approves this appeal with modifications before this project goes forward, this project gets to assess the true value of the industrial sanctuary and hold that true. You're basically making a speech for what Portland values, making that decision today. And the reason I think that certainly we can look at, I like what you said about let's not make exceptions, make exceptions, make exceptions. If it should be wider, let's make it wider for everybody. And I agree, that's the direction that you may want to take in the long haul. We don't have the long haul in this particular situation. We have one of the largest residential developments going into something that is part of us having a livable city. When we say we want a walkable city, that's not just about where we live and where we go to a restaurant. That's also about where we go to work. So if we push our housing out into the suburbs, that affects the ecology of Portland. If we push our industrial out into the corners, where it tends to go in many cities, then we also take away the walkability of our jobs. And as they said, these are family jobs. When I interview these businesses, I'm looking at what's normally a retail job, people who hold it for 20 years. So at Wings Hardware, at Platt & Larson, where they're doing the development of the tiles. These people have held these jobs, which traditionally are turnover jobs, with benefits, with health care, for many, many years. So I see a lot of value here, and I hope that this testimony today can inspire you to go in the appeal direction, to buy time, not just for this particular project, but to review and see if what we need to do to have a truly protected industrial sanctuary in the center of our city, not at the edges. Thank you.
Thank you. Marianne?
Marianne Schwab, Sunnyside resident, and Karen's right. Once we lose this resource, it's lost and can't be easily reconstructed. Today, coming from Milwaukee, I cut down Holgate and across 26th, and when I got to the traffic light, the four-way stop on Gladstone, here's this great big 53-foot truck trying to make a turn. I don't know how wide that street is, but it was really a jam. So it's not just your industrial district. We have truck routes, and a lot of people coming from out of state may not know what those truck routes are, but they are on our neighborhood streets. And I'm glad that people have mentioned the construction of the housing. There's 250 multifamily units coming here. You're going to have people in wheelchairs, walkers, children walking to school. Listening to this young man with a dump truck and bicycles going underneath his lift truck, that's pretty scary. We need to leave the street as is. I've done the math. The 250 multifamily units are going to come with 181 cars. We need to pay attention to these things. Not just that, and the insulation for the noise, people are sleeping up above. And this is something Mayor Hales came to OLCC not long ago, tried to tell those commissioners that the city landscape has changed in the last 30 years. We have storefront businesses and people trying to sleep upstairs. His nasty response was, it's our business to sell product, and it's your business as an elected official to enforce your noise ordinance. We have families that are going to be living upstairs. There's sleep deprivation. We need to look at more than just the trucks coming and going. It is an industrial area. People are going to know that it is an industrial area. They're going to be educated to that point. But these family units upstairs, you're putting people in. Is there a room for the commons where they can celebrate holidays and watch a football game together? They don't pencil that out. Also, is there air conditioning in every unit? Too many of these, because they're affordable housing, they'll put the AC in the main halls in the public rooms, but each individual unit does not have air conditioning. Are there washers and dryers in every unit? I wouldn't want a little munchkin going to a common washer-dryer area to get the laundry and find that the machines are broken and that it takes a bazillion nickels just to get the blue jeans and towels dried. So we need to look at those types of things as well.
And with this developer coming in, we're going to need safe routes to school. Where are these kids going to school? We want to make sure that they're safe in getting across 12th, that's a busy street, and up to the Buckman Elementary School and over to the park. And eventually, I would like to see them go swimming at the Washington High School Recreation Center. Thank you.
Thank you. Sir?
My name is Eric Campbell. I run a wood shop out of the Cully neighborhood, and as well as a portable sawmill. I do a lot of work down in the industrial district and have done so for years. We've heard a lot of perspectives today on the technicalities of street dimensions, legal codes, and visions of what this district could and should be. The industrial district as it now stands is indeed a sanctuary. The applicant for this redevelopment project promises a groundbreaking project, one that is memorable and exciting, but to be honest, I see nothing groundbreaking about replicating what's already been built on Williams, Belmont, Hawthorne, and Division. Essential services are also promised, but only two shops, a grocery and a hardware store, have been specified. The rest of the, or the balance of the 111,000 square retail space is simply that, retail space. The creative industrial community that calls this district home is under threat. It's under a threat of being fractured and sent to the different parts of the city. The relationships that exist between fabricators, between metalworkers and woodworkers, between mills, builders, it's tight-knit. We're able to access things that, you know, are just down the street instead of across town. With that, the services that this district provides to the city and to the citizenry is also under threat. People can come to the industrial district. They can get things done. They can find what they need to find. Winks is a store that's kind of a cure-all for those in the business of making. Creative Northwest, I mean, when I have a problem in my wood shop, I go to Creative Northwest because they can fix it. If they can't fix it, nobody can fix it. So, you know, I like having them within easy access. Reviewing the conclusions in this appeal, you know, it is true. The project that's proposed for this block will transform this neighborhood, but not in the way you think. This is kind of the first step in the encroachment on an area that has been and should remain industrial. I think the last thing I'd like to say is that, you know, the project promises to respect the solidity and the honesty of the surrounding industrial district. It says that it reflects the authenticity, form, and character of the district as well. But I don't want reflections, and I don't want respect. I want my industrial district. I want to be able to access it today and tomorrow and in the years to come. Thank you.
Thank you. Was that it, Carla?
That's all who signed up.
Okay. Now we'll hear from the principal opponent, which is the, in this case, that's the applicant. And they will have 15 minutes. Welcome.
Thank
you. And all you have to do is just give us your name, and you have the clock is right in front of you there, and you have 15 minutes.
All right. Let me see if I can work this here.
While he's setting that up, my name is Dana Krafchak. I'm a land use attorney at Perkins Coie. I represent the applicant. This is Lance Killian, and we have members of our development team in attendance if you have some technical questions. So Lance is going to start off by talking a little bit about Killian Pacific and the project, and then I'm going to touch on some of the legal issues.
Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Lance Killian. I'm a principal with Killian Pacific. We're the owner and developer of what the Goat Blocks, the project we now call LOCA. Just a little bit of background on us. We actually are not urban farmers or goat shepherds, as you might guess with all the press about the goats. But instead, what really drives us is enhancing community. So through our work of visioning, designing, building, and owning projects, we advance social and economic value in communities. So we've been at this for about 45 years. My father, George, started the business. We developed for our own account. and we plan as if we're going to own these properties for multiple generations. We have been active in the city of Portland. We currently own properties and have developed several properties within the city. We're certainly currently very enthused with what's happening in the Central East Side. We were an early investor in the neighborhood, and we've been focused on providing compelling work environments and community-activating retail and mixed-use projects. I'd like to just show you a few of those and let you know kind of what we're up to in a broader context in the Central East Side. So this aerial photograph shows the both the operating properties and development properties that we're working on currently. The 14th and Morrison project, called Morrison Place, home to Nostrana Restaurant, was a renovation of a vacant building that we completed in 2004. There are two reuse projects down close to OMSI off of 3rd Street. One is the Oregon Electric Building, which is a reuse and a headquarters facility for Oregon Electric Group. The second is the Viewpoint Building, which will be occupied later this year by Viewpoint Software. They'll be moving in about 200 high-paying jobs as an expansion of their headquarters facility across the street. The 240 Clay project is just a block away to the east. This is on the former Taylor Electric burned-out site. Our plan is to break ground in the first quarter of 2015 on this 70,000-square-foot industrial office building, which will be able to house several hundred office workers. And moving on now to the LOCA project, as you all know, the goats have been recently moved to another site. And just reflecting back, we acquired this property about 15 years ago, and at that time, our vision was formed for what would happen on the property, not only by our own input, but outreach to the surrounding stakeholders. And what held true then still holds true today. And what we heard was that this was a grocery desert, that the community needed a grocery store, that there was a need for robust neighborhood retail and services, that there was a need for market rate housing and unique public gathering spaces, and of course, ample parking to support all of it. Well, I strongly believe that what you see today, the local project, provides all of that and more. It will truly form the foundation for a 20-minute community and employment area. We acknowledge LOCA is a complex and complicated project. It requires a balancing of varying desires and needs. And to that end, we held over 50 different stakeholder meetings throughout the course of the last 2-plus years. Our flexibility is demonstrated as an example with the Buckman neighborhood. They had a concern over the height of one of the proposed residential buildings, so we removed 2 floors. And as another example, there's been much discussion today already about the CEIC. We are and have been a member of the CEIC for many years. We worked closely with the CEIC to address things such as loading dock location and design, and also the location of residential units within the project. Overlaying on top of this, the actual function of the retail anchors and the residential uses required certain attributes be conserved within the project. And last but not least, we went through close to a 10-month design review process, which led to significant modifications to materiality and overall design aspects of the project. We recognize that development of this project will bring change, and certainly change is not always easily accepted by all. But the public right-of-way issues driving today's appeal were well anticipated via the 2008 freight mobility standards that were adopted by City Council after a lengthy public process. It's worth noting that we meet or exceed all of the standards in this document, and we have not requested any modifications or variances thereto. In summary, we're proud of the extensive community outreach that we've done to listen and accommodate the public and stakeholders and balance their desires and needs as much as possible. And we're very excited about the 200-plus permanent jobs that will reside on this site once the project is complete. Thank you for your time, and on behalf of my father and I, our firm, and the many, many people who've been involved to get the project to this point, we would ask for your support in denying this appeal today. And with that, I will turn it over to Dana Kraftcheck as part of our team. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'd like to bring us back to where we started. Lindley read you a script because this is a quasi-judicial land use decision. The decision was adjudicated based on the applicable criteria, which are found in Title 33. What we've been hearing about today are Title 17 and related guidelines and the comprehensive plan. So I'd like to step back and give a little bit of a lesson or a tutorial on both of those. In the Oregon land use planning system, the comp plan is at the top of the hierarchy. The zoning code implements the comp plan. Design guidelines implement the zoning code. In decisions like design review, which is a limited land use decision, which is a term of art in the statute, that means it's a decision where the use is permitted. It's just what's it going to look like. The statute says, and LUBA has affirmed, that unless a city's code expressly says the comprehensive plan is an applicable approval criterion, it is not. And a review body does not err by not making findings related to that comprehensive plan policy. So what that means is when we're talking about the EX zone, which allows residential uses outright, let's not forget pretty much the entirety of the Pearl District is zoned EX. The fact that the comprehensive plan has a policy that says this should be compatible with industrial uses doesn't mean that findings are appropriate or required. If you were to decide to make findings, nonetheless, in the materials we've submitted today and in the design review proceeding, there was abundant information about how this project is compatible with the surrounding area. Examples include they've designed the project so that the residential uses are faced away from the industrial zone area. For example, of all of the bedrooms in the project, nine will have frontage on Taylor or 10th, the industrial areas. There's increased soundproofing on these units, and we've oriented the storefront retail away from Taylor at Creative Woodworking's request. We've also reached out to the adjacent neighbors and the CEIC in March of this year and proposed a good neighbor agreement. Terms of this good neighbor agreement, which are attached to our materials, included things like informing prospective tenants, you are entering an industrial sanctuary. Expect noise. Expect trucks. Don't complain about them, but if you feel compelled to complain about them, talk to us, not the city, so that we could serve as an intermediary and try to address these concerns in a collaborative manner. Our interests are aligned with the adjacent property owners. We don't want tenants breaking their lease because it turns out there's a wood shop next door. We want them to come in with their eyes wide open. The only response that we've gotten on the good neighbor agreement was an email about a month later saying that, you know, they appreciated the effort, there were some concerns, and we could talk about it. It's still out there as an offer. We intend to independently have a lease writer so that we inform prospective tenants that they're entering a mixed-use neighborhood with industrial areas. On the Title 17 issues, design review doesn't address Title 17. We've heard a lot about a paper wall. Design Commission needs to know where the property line is likely going to be so they know how much site they have to work with in approving a project. That's why PBOT is very involved during design review to describe what the expected dedications will be. Those decisions, though, are made later through the city engineer at the time of building permit. So Design Commission did not make a single decision about what the width of the right-of-way was going to be. If the city engineer disagrees with what Design Commission assumed, we've got to go back to Design Commission and modify our plan. So there is no paper wall. Title 17 gives jurisdiction over right-of-way width to the city engineer. We think a lot about what street designs look like. Here are just two of the plans that the city has adopted. Designing for truck movements and other large vehicles in Portland, which was adopted by this body exactly 6 years ago today, October 8th, 2008. The following year, we took a closer look at the Central East Side, recognizing that the Central East Side is unique. Both of these documents recognize it's a constraint environment and have both a preferred and an acceptable right-of-way width. We exceed both. So it seems like what we're dealing with today is an appeal of the wrong decision in the wrong form. The concerns you heard today are legitimate to these individual business owners. The objective evidence through both computer modeling and field tests demonstrate there is no negative operational effect on the freight mobility. The standards are met. If the standards don't work, let's revisit them, either through the Southeast Quadrant Plan, Comprehensive Planning Project, or through a revision to the recently adopted Central East Side Plan. This design review approval, which has nothing to do with street widths, is not the appropriate form. I'd welcome any questions, or if you've got technical questions, we can bring up our civil engineer. Oh, and last thing, we don't object to conversion of on-street parking to loading. It's a balance. It's a very, very parking-constrained environment, so we don't think you should undertake that lightly, but it's not our right-of-way to control. It's the city's, so if in your discretion you decide that's the best use of the right-of-way, we certainly don't object.
Can I just ask you, you say that the design review, you've made a very strong case about the issues that are and are not before us. Was it within the power of design review to require that the 3 additional feet of the sidewalk come out of the project scope and not out of the street?
I think that design review would have had a difficult case making that justification. Given that we meet the standard, there wouldn't be much of a nexus to require additional right-of-way dedication, and that the impacts that we're talking about are impacts of existing uses, not the impacts of our project, so there could be a proportionality issue. So we've dedicated land. Why not dedicate more? Because we meet the standard. There's not a need to go above and beyond the standard.
In addition, I'm just curious, how do you read this phrase, residential uses are allowed but should be compatible with the surrounding industrial development? Debbie Kitchen testified she's not here to quarrel about the fact that residential use is allowed within this zoning. But if that is still something the council wants to grapple with, how do you define that term?
Compatible, I think, means that efforts are made to coexist. Examples of efforts to mitigate potential conflicts include things like the design elements that I described, orienting residential uses away from industrial uses, increasing soundproofing. Those are mitigation steps that can be taken to be made compatible.
Commissioner, I just had one comment to add to your first question. Actually, what occurred during our design review process is that the Design Review Commission deferred to PBOT as to the right-of-way aspect before they made their final decision as it related to the actual design review.
And when you mentioned in your presentation that there's ample parking for your new residents, did that take into account whether or not there would be parking on the street in addition to the parking spaces that you're providing?
We actually are providing 0.6 stalls per residential unit and 2.5 parking stalls per 1,000 for the retail, which is far exceeds what the code requirements are. So we're providing those all off-site. There was a lot of feedback all the way from the beginning of this conception of this project to retain as many on-street parking stalls as possible because parking is tight in this area. So we actually were trying to walk that line of retaining as many on-street stalls as we could at the same time.
But you agree with your attorney that you can do without them if necessary?
If absolutely necessary, certainly it's would be preferred to have stalls that are immediately adjacent to storefronts. But
do you believe you have enough capacity for the grocery store parking?
We do, yes.
How did you figure out what the appropriate capacity for that was?
We actually have done a lot of grocery work throughout the years and have good relationships with several grocery chains, including Market of Choice. I mean, they certainly participated in the process.
And if I can add, in addition to providing more vehicular parking spaces than are required, we're providing more bicycle parking, both short and long-term, than are required. And one of the quotes that sticks out to me during the Design Commission proceedings was the chair of the Design Commission wanting to know how we were going to accommodate the hordes of cyclists that travel up Belmont. And so we've dispersed the bicycle parking in that area, and we anticipate that a large percentage of the grocery population customers will be cyclists to and from work. So let's not forget about that mode.
Do you have indoor cycle parking for your residents?
We do, yes.
How many bicycle spaces inside do you have?
I would have to ask somebody else. I don't know the exact number.
And one other thing with our parking that's innovative is trying to utilize the site as efficiently as possible. We're using parking machines, which not many projects in the city have. So it's a way to avoid digging deeper, which is extremely expensive, particularly given the high water table in this area, but essentially high-rise parking stalls for the residential, for some, a portion of the residential parkers.
Is that like the elevator for you? You drive your car on and it gets taken upstairs?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's funny. That's interesting. Thank you.
What projections have you made about the amount of truck traffic that is caused by having deliveries made to their grocery store?
That actually was contained in our traffic study, and I couldn't tell you exactly. I wasn't involved with that specific aspect of the project, but we may have someone here who can answer that question.
Is there some mechanism for off-street delivery at the grocery store?
We've provided on-site loading zones or loading areas so that they back into our site, so we're not competing for the street-designated loading areas. So we expect to be able to accommodate the large and small trucks for both the grocery store and the hardware store within the site.
So you still have 3 minutes left. Did you want to bring somebody else from your team, or if not,
I don't think
we're more than
so.
Willing to reclaim the time.
You know, I think that's all we've got.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
So now's the time that anybody who is wishes to testify in support of the applicant. Do we have anybody signed up?
No one else signed up.
Okay. In that case, it's the opportunity for rebuttal by the appellant. 5 minutes.
So Peter Fry, I'll go quick first. First, I want to point out that it's a final land use decision, so for them to change it, they have to go back through the entire process and pay the full fees. Second, I want to point out that PBOT did say that they want a CIC board approval to support the right-of-way, and the board acted, I wasn't there, and said that they'd give approval if PBOT got the approval of the impact of property owners. So I just wanted to point those two things out.
Just to clarify that, could you just say that in a different wording?
Excuse me?
Tell me what you just said again in terms of what the board was supportive of.
So PBOD is, through the design review process, asked CEI, Centrally Side Board, to give approval for the right-of-way. And Centrally Side Board's response was, yes, if you have the approval of the abutting property owners.
And that's for the, what do you mean for the right-of-way? What?
The right-of-way design that PBOT was proposing.
The 3-foot narrowing.
The current one.
Yeah, the proposed.
Current proposal.
So the board said yes, but the property owners have to agree.
So the board conditioned their approval on the property owner's approval.
And that's, we've heard that the property owners don't.
Do not approve.
Got it. Thank you very much.
And Jeff Kleinman, just to clarify, and if I may respond to Commissioner Novick, on the issue you raised earlier after our presentation. I've placed a copy of my email to Kurt Kruger in the record, which has the language that we feel works. And we would have we don't have a concern with revisiting the parking issues and the truck traffic issues as to how they relate to the signage 6 months after build out. But that should not be a free lunch. Those issues, under what I've prepared after talking with Kurt, can be revisited at any time, but changes could only be made in consultation with and with the agreement of the adjacent property owners. So as long as that's part of it, as long as this is not just a 6-month directive and then the signs can go away, that would be a real problem, and we couldn't support that.
Thank you.
Do you have anything else?
Is that it?
That's all I had.
Okay. I have one question. I read the decision. I must have missed it because you're not allowed to enter or exit right away, except in forward motion. And the attorney pointed out that they were going back onto their private property, which would require an adjustment or a modification. And I missed it because I did not see it in the decision. So I would hope staff could, because they could not make that decision without that modification.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you both. Okay, council discussion, or we don't need staff come back up?
Is there anything either of you would like to clarify or give your opinion on?
The forward motion standard Peter just mentioned, in the Central City Plan District, you only have to meet that forward motion standard for loading if you're on a streetcar or light rail street. So their loading is on 10th, which isn't a streetcar street, so they don't have to do the forward motion. They can back into their loading space.
Okay. Kurt Kruger again from PBOT. Just a couple points of clarification on some testimony. Mr. Redmond's son identified that there were trucks coming from Canada that were longer than we tested. That's new to me today, so I apologize. That was not something we were aware of at the time of the testing. We're comfortable with the language of having the no parking signs from 6 to 2 and revisit those. I'd like to assure council personally that we're going to revisit this parking, and if we need to move signs one way or the other, or change things a little bit, we're going to do this in a collaborative manner. This is the way PBOT does parking changes. These are living signs. They may be pretty stale on a post, but they're very fluid. They adjust to the needs of the district. So, again, we want to make sure that we've got the flexibility to adjust these if we need to.
Kurt, you have great credibility with us. Not everyone here today maybe has gone through a land use proceeding, so it's understandable why people often ask to have things be a condition, because that ensures a process and it ultimately comes back to council. On the other hand, there are more informal agreements that we can establish and just be clear about what the protocol is if there's a big disagreement. And to whom would that come? Would that flow from you to the commissioner in charge? Is there a scenario where the council would be advised? I think the more clarity we have around that, the better.
Couple other comments. I forgot to raise this, and I think this is an important point for those in the room. PBOT's got an awkward permit that we call an angle loading permit. And really, it's not a permit to allow angled parking. It's a permit to allow truck loading operations that are non-traditional. We recognize the Central East Side as a constrained area with trucks that come and go, and they oftentimes will block most of the entire street for certain periods of time. We have issued a number of permits to business owners to conduct kind of strange loading for certain periods of the day. That is available to any of these property owners to come in, consult with us to see if we can issue permits that allow them to do things they're doing today that actually probably aren't authorized outright, but are not being brought to our attention because we haven't had a tenant on the site for a number of years. So I want to make sure publicly that's available to these property owners and these business owners. I think that's all I had.
Thank you.
Oh, I had a question. So Peter Friendly Fry just made a point that PBOT said that without the approval of the abutting property owners, the changes wouldn't be approved. Is that?
Commissioner,
I want your version of that.
That falls under the category of no good deed goes unpunished. I made a discretionary call myself on the involvement of a PBOT making a decision in this district. I recognize that we have a unique situation here. We've got industrial, we've got EX proposed here. We're meshing two different zones, and if we're going to make a change here, I open this up, which we typically don't, to engagement with the CEIC. I didn't want to bring this up, but there was an indication from an individual in the CEIC. I don't know if he was on the board at that time, but he was my contact who assured us that they were supportive of this decision. So we moved forward for a period of time. And there was an indication that we were going to get a letter of support for that. That did not come. And so we went back, the applicant went back to CEIC, and they said we would vote to support this if there's support from the budding property owners. At that point, that assurance did not come. So then we took it to the next step and said, well, let's go put a real truck on the street and conduct the field test. So that's the chain of events that happened over the last few months.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Kruger, just to return to the issue of the possible agreement with Gatto and Sons. What Mr. Kleinman proposed is that
we would put no parking signs up between 6 and 2, and that could only be modified under specific circumstances. And my feeling is that that's, we can't really agree to that. We can agree that we will put those parking signs up now and that we will reevaluate in 6 months in good faith, but we're not comfortable agreeing to those conditions as to changing it.
Well, if I might leap in here, I am very reluctant, in fact, won't vote to support putting a condition of approval about the right-of-way into this land use review. This is about the design commission's ruling. So we've got quite an unusual situation here in that we all agree. We all agree that we want the Central East Side Industrial District to remain a vibrant, industrially focused district. We all agree that this is a good project that is going that is appropriately zoned for. We agree that we trust Kurt Kruger and the Bureau of Transportation, and we agree that the standards for the roadway width are actually met. So there's some flexibility within the dedicated right-of-way for having parking, no parking, loading zone parking, all of those things that you as the Transportation Commissioner and PBOT, you do that all over the city with absolutely no public input. What we've got here is a representative from the Department of Transportation willing to work with the Central East Side Industrial Council, which I would also have to say is almost unique in being a phenomenal, collaborative, I can't think of enough wonderful things to say about the Central East Side Industrial Council that I have known for many, many years. So we've got this mutual respect, and I think I certainly am comfortable that those good parties will work together, including with the applicant, who has also shown an unusual willingness to work with the neighborhood to figure things out. Parking signs can be changed at very little cost. And so we do have a forum at Citizen Communications every Wednesday morning that if aggrieved parties feel that this isn't being properly implemented, they can always come to the City Council and say, remember, just last October when you approved this land use, you said that we're going to take care of parking and it's a problem. So I don't think we actually need to define any particular conditions on this. Unless I'm forgetting something, we all agree on this.
The other point that I would make is that to those of you who have come out today to take the time to testify, you've created a record.
Yes.
You have placed your concerns on the record before the City Council. And so I think people often underestimate the power of doing that. You've educated the council to a set of concerns. I know more about this four-block area than almost any other part of the city other than the neighborhood where I live. I think Steve, you're likely to offer one condition of approval, which is that if the dispute is not resolved by May of 2016, Commissioner Fritz agrees to run for re-election so that she can continue to guide us on this?
Well, actually, the other condition I would have is that the goats be consulted because they're
an
interested party. But I think they have a historic interest, and I really would have liked to hear from them today.
So I think we're at the point here where I think it's important for us that we need to try to better explain what we're doing here because I am frankly lost. And I've been on this body for 16 years. So we're asking to say basically the design, everybody's happy with the design. We want some direction to Kurt Kruger of PBOT to work with, and this is maybe the part that I'm a little concerned about, is to work with possibly altering the number of parking spaces or the type of parking spaces. Because I do have to agree with the one gentleman that testified. I mean, each one of those parking spaces is pretty cherished. It represents, you know, a place for somebody who's working in the CEIC to park, to access their job. I know people walk, but a lot of people drive. So is that what we're doing? We're simply saying figure it out somehow at the expense of the parking supply?
You're right, this is unique, and this is the first time we've come across this in a land use proceeding, to my knowledge. I'd want to say for the record, the parking there is unique today. It is a mix of homeless camping that is occurring today, so we have parking spaces that are not turning over that are just basically becoming long-term parking spots, as well as parking riding operations for people on the east side that are parking at this block and walking or commuting across the river. So these parking spaces today are not serving the district needs, in my professional opinion.
Okay.
So
okay.
The development of the site, implementing signs that allow the required requirement of parking to turn over, is actually going to serve this district far better than it is today.
Okay.
What we're struggling to do is how council can direct transportation to operate the parking in here to best serve both users on either side of the street.
And I think the council, at least the majority of the council, has signaled they're uncomfortable being too prescriptive about that, because we understand the commissioner in charge and the Bureau have agreed to take it up and to make their best judgment. But if we start becoming prescriptive, I think we've crossed this line, because it is not technically germane to this appeal.
Thank you, Commissioner.
I think Commissioner Fisher, you're correct in that being prescriptive in here. I don't run the parking signs. We have a parking section that does this. And at some point down the road, if there's a request that comes in to change a sign, we have a record. And we can come back and point to the legislative intent of this discussion to say, this is how we arrived there. And if we're going to make a change, we need to be aware of what council was discussing with these parties.
Commissioner Fritz, could you articulate a motion just so we have something to think about?
I move to deny the appeal and uphold the Design Commission's recommendation.
Second, for purpose of discussion.
And then we can have a separate motion on a directing or encouraging Central East Side Industrial Council to petition the Commissioner in Charge of Transportation in 6 months after it started for a discussion before council about the parking, if that's necessary. But I don't think it's going to be, because I just believe that the parties are going to work together, as you normally do, on parking issues.
So we had a motion, it was seconded, so we're discussing it. So I guess I still have a question, and I guess I'm just not maybe fully tracking this. The issue about the truck movement, I mean, you just indicated you're not familiar perhaps with a Canadian truck being a larger size than what was tested. So how does that all play out from here? If that's indeed a legitimate issue that, you know, we just didn't think about the bigger truck and the impact that may have on the businesses, the adjacent businesses.
So PBOT has the authority to change parking, remove parking, limit parking. And if we run into something that we didn't foresee down the road and we need to remove a space at a corner to facilitate a truck turn for a limited period of time, PBOT's committed to making sure that operation can occur.
Okay. And then, is there any further discussion? So Carla, please call the roll.
May I ask, is council intending to take a tentative vote and come back for adoption of findings? And that might be a question also directed at the applicant, whether they would like the opportunity to revise the findings before voting.
Yeah, we should ask the applicant whether they would like to revise the findings.
Dana is shaking her head.
So it would be a tentative vote and set it for coming back.
Okay, so we're making a tentative decision. We need a date for coming back with the findings.
How much time do you need?
Probably just at least a couple weeks away. We can do the findings in a week, I think.
Let's see. Would the 22nd work?
October 22nd?
Yes. Is that
too soon? That's fine.
Okay. At the morning or the afternoon?
Just for findings, we could do 10:15 a.m.
Okay.
Morning of the 22nd.
Okay, 10:15 on October 22nd. Okay, Carla, please call the roll.
Novick.
I just want to say that even if I were convinced that our street standards in the Central East Side were wrong, I would still vote to deny the appeal, simply to paraphrase John Adams, on the grounds that we need to have a government of laws and not of individuals. I don't think that we can act. I mean, our employees have to have the right to discuss issues like this with developers on the assumption that the rules are the rules, and to make agreements based on the idea that the rules are the rules, rather than on the assumption that the rules might change at any time because we want to accommodate what people are used to. And that doesn't even get to the question of whether we have the right to uphold this appeal based on street width, which isn't part of design review. So I'm going to vote to deny, I would vote to deny the appeal, but I want to make it clear that that's not based really on independent judgment as to whether the street widths are appropriate. It's based on the idea that we have to, that the rules are the rules, and if we want to change the rules, we should have a separate process for that. So I vote aye, right, on the motion. Aye.